So we are beginning with Dr. Edelstein, who will give us a presentation about electromagnetic radiation, including 5G frequencies, health effects summary, and policy recommendations. So,
I thought this would be a better solution, technical. Okay, so this was my original plan. I doubt I will make it to the public policy recommendations. Okay, I just want to make a few comments before about things that were said before. I agree with Tiliana, the main problem is addiction and skewed social norms. I see no reason why people have to download movies inside the elevator or inside the bus, or why everything has to be done through wireless devices. It is some kind of social norm that it's, oh, it's nicer, it's cooler, it's more comfortable. But it's not a requirement. I don't use any wireless devices in my house at all, and I also moved house to have less neighbors who use wireless devices on me. And also I see a problem about voluntary exposure because I point the problem to the Ministry of Education, who are forcing wireless devices on children, and they don't really need to do that. It's a choice, and the children who are under this have no choice. And even about sitting in a classroom with 40 cell phones, when these cell phones could be turned off and put somewhere else on the side. And the Ministry of Health, that really says nothing. Yes, there are. Very few. But that is one thing that could be done to reduce exposure greatly. And also, there is a problem with the Ministry of Health not saying anything about the topic and just saying go to TNUDA. But TNUDA is actually run by people who used to work in communication and used to work in the army. And their interests are not exactly in raising public awareness to health risks. So now that I've said all this, I will also say that I'm not focusing on 5G because, in my opinion, the problem did not start with 5G. The problem, as I see it, started more with 4G, when it was suddenly deemed appropriate to download movies in every corner of the street. That is where the problem started, and I see a big problem in wireless meters as well. So we're talking about electromagnetic radiation as the fastest growing environmental pollutant. In Sweden, electrohypersensitivity is recognized as a handicap. And then you can ask, why in Sweden? Because there were companies like Ericsson and Nokia, and they had technicians there who became electrohypersensitive, and they had a lot of power, and they caused the government to give them payment. Okay, so in 2006, the incidence of electrohypersensitivity was recognized as being between 3 to 11%, and we know it is rising with a rise in exposure. And as Daniel said, in Israel, people who suffer from electrohypersensitivity are not believed. They are considered psychiatric, or people are saying, oh, they saw the antenna, and that's why they think they have a problem. This is a paper by Carpenter and Pri Bandera. They published this in 2018, and they show that environmental background, environmental levels of EMF has risen by 10 by 18 times. So if the background level, the natural one, was the green, and then 1950s was the yellow, now we're at the reds. In 2006, Gerd Oberfeld, who is the head, still the head of the public health department in Salzburg, took a lot of studies showing how many people thought they were electrohypersensitive, and he was the one who said this is between 3 to 11%. And then he extrapolated this to show that according to the rise that he sees, he thinks that around 2015, there should be about 50% of the population with some sensitivities. Okay, so what are we talking about? What is electrohypersensitivity? So the symptoms that have been described are neurological mostly, which include headaches, dizziness, tiredness, tinnitus, different kinds of aches and pains, nausea, abdominal cramps, sensitivity that is more like, is like turned up, the volume of the sensitivity turned up to all the senses, to light, to noise. To children, they have memory deficits. I think the most common symptom I hear is that people say, I feel like there is a cloud inside my head. I want to find the word and I find myself saying a different word from what I mean and I can't think. And some people have described even blackout. They say, I talk and then in the middle of the sentence, I stop. I don't remember what I'm doing here and it takes me a minute to come back. And I've heard this from patients. And people complain of itches, of itches and prickling sensations in their head, in their face. They have pains in muscles and joints. Their heartbeat is irregular. They have palpitations. And diabetes becomes out of control. And they have high inflammatory biomarkers, and not to talk about the low fertility problems. So in 2015, David Carpenter published a paper that gives some of the background about the microwave sickness, which is now called electrohypersensitivity. And he described these as the common symptoms, fatigue, weakness, headaches, and the things that I said. He gave an example in his paper of a group of Air Force personnel who had been exposed to the high limits of radiation and came to be checked by their physician. So what the physician did, he gave them some psychometric testing. And then he said, okay, so they have prolonged fatigue, weakness, irritability, memory problems, and weight changes. But it seems to be a psychiatric personal coping style or some organic dysfunction. So two-thirds of a group of young, healthy Air Force personnel suddenly developed psychiatric problems. Also, these guidelines published in 2015 by a group of scientists in Europe discussed that mental disorders had increased and especially something called burnout increased sevenfold from between 2004 to 2011 and also an increase in the prevalence of allergic and asthmatic diseases. So what are we actually talking about? What is happening? What happened is that I was intrigued in looking at individual patients, but it was looking at like the edge of the iceberg. So what I did, I got permission to open a clinic at Hadassah, which is called the Electromagnetic Research Clinic. And I presented this summary of 19 patients. I do this voluntarily once a month in the afternoon. I see three patients. In the beginning, I started seeing six patients, but just each patient wants to talk so long, so it takes 2 hours. And so I have this summary of 19 patients of all ages, children and adults, of all professions. And their symptoms look kind of familiar if you saw the previous list. They have headaches, they have brain fog, they have sleep difficulties, anxiety, weakness, dizziness. Some of them had blackouts, some of them had palpitations, chest tightness, and things like that. Now, I did not have a list of these symptoms and asked, which of these do you have? What I do, I sit with a patient and I ask him, what are your symptoms? And the patient just gives me a list of their symptoms without any trigger from me. So this is a list I compiled from my 19 patients. Some of them have been also diagnosed with fibromyalgia, which personally I think is sort of the same problem. Some of them had been previously exposed to air pollution, and some of them had begun, their problems had begun after a spine or head trauma. And most of them were sensitive more to the high frequencies, but one was sensitive only to low frequencies and had no problem with cell phone. And there was one who was not sensitive to anything. I think he does not have electrohypersensitivity. He has something else. But what is interesting to see is that these patients did not come to me for diagnosis. These patients had already figured this out, and they came to me just to discuss their problem because nobody believes them, and everybody sends them from doctor to doctor and says, you have nothing. And they came to me after they had either left their work, children who had left school because they felt bad over there. And only 30% of the workplaces actually agreed to accommodate so that the patient could stay. And some of them had also moved house. Okay, so now we're going to studies. In 2007, this very interesting study that Ronnie Seger is going to talk to us about maybe later was one of the first mechanisms that actually described a non-thermal mechanism in which electromagnetic radiation by a non-thermal mechanism generates reactive oxygen species and stress-related cascades in the cell. And we're going to hear a lot about this from Martin Paul tomorrow, so I'm not going to talk too much about it. But he has shown that the calcium, voltage-gated calcium channels produce, lead to increased intracellular calcium, and this by a pathway increases the nitric oxide in the cells, and then it can act in pathophysiological responses to the EMF exposure. So it causes the cells to have more oxidative stress. This is a hypothesis paper by Ole Johansson, who's one of the oldest EHS researchers from Sweden, and Paul Doyon, who is himself an EHS sufferer, and they said, okay, all these studies have shown that there is more CO2, more calcium in it in the cells, so we think that then it can inhibit the calcineurin in the cell, block the calcium uptake by T lymphocytes, and lead to immunosuppression. This is hypothesized mechanism, how electromagnetic radiation can lead to immunosuppression, and we know that people who are hypersensitive do indeed have a higher risk of catching any virus or influenza or even bacterial problems. Okay, so now this has already been discussed by Deborah Davis. This was the study in India that compared people who live near and far away from base stations. And by the way, I'm not going to discuss anything about cancer. Other people are going to talk about that. This is a study from 2005 that showed IgE production. We know that the immune system of people with electrohypersensitivity shows they seem to be more allergic. So this rise in asthma and allergy shown in Germany and in Europe can actually not exactly be asthma and allergy. It is some kind of sensitization problem in the body, which is partly caused by electromagnetic radiation and partly caused by other environmental pollutants. There is this amazing group in Iran that are doing a lot of research about electromagnetic radiation, and I hope that the political situation will once enable me to be in touch with them. But they show windows of exposure that cause bacteria to change their sensitivities to antibiotics. They show on Klebsiella, and they show it on Listeria and E. coli, and they've published a lot of studies about this. No, not about specifically pulse, but about specific frequencies. The window was frequencies that when the bacteria are exposed to these frequencies, they will be more resistant or less resistant. We can look at this together, the papers. I wouldn't have had time if I had to open every single paper. Okay. Okay. 2.4 was one of them. Okay. Okay. In 1994, Salford's group showed that both continuous and pulse modulated radiation at around 900 megahertz can open up the blood-brain barrier. And I remember I discussed this with you, Yuri, when I came to study with you. And at the time, people didn't believe him, and many people were unable to replicate his studies, and he was considered controversial. And I'll show you in a minute and one of the studies that failed to replicate his findings. But this is one of his later papers that he showed after 7 days after exposure in the 900 megahertz, he showed extravasation of albumin inside brain tissue. And this was on non-thermal SAR levels below the limits that are allowed. And this is an example of a study that failed to replicate the group's findings. And interestingly, it is supported by the telecom companies, which possibly, if it had replicated the findings, maybe would not have been published. Okay, so this is a study by a group from Turkey. They showed the effects of GSM-modulated radio frequency radiation on the permeability of the blood-brain barrier. And they exposed, they had three groups of exposure. They had controls, they had 900, and they had 1800 megahertz. And all of these animals' bodies were not changed by the experiment. And they had a 20-minute exposure. They showed that in rats, in male rats, both a 900 and 1800 pulse had an effect that induced the permeability of the blood-brain barrier. And in females, only the 900. There was another study from China, but I couldn't access it. Maybe we could look at it somewhere else. This is a study of people who, of a research group from Turkey who induced a model of diabetes in rats, and they showed that if they add electromagnetic radiation to the diabetes, there is extravasation of the Evans blue marker into the brain tissue, especially into the cerebellum, but not only. This is a study by oncologists, and their point was to make holes in the blood-brain barrier using like high intensities in order to put medications inside the brain. But what is interesting, I brought this study because they showed the pulsations, that if you have 10 pulses or you have 540 pulses with the same intensities, okay, so the area that is affected beyond the part of the brain that they want to irradiate is much, much bigger. So the number of pulsations makes a big difference. This is a study from 2017 from China that they wanted to show difference in the immune system in the brain. But what was extremely interesting about this study was that they showed that chronic EMF exposure induced myelin damage. And you can see here in the large power images that here is a healthy myelin, and here is the myelin that was really like falling apart, which was like Devra said, the membranes are coming apart. Something is happening to the shapes of the cells. This is a study from 2017 that wanted to check patients who were self-proclaimed electrohypersensitive, but they had been diagnosed as psychiatric, and the researcher said, let's do functional MRI to see if we can find something different about their brains. So the regular MRIs were not remarkable, but I could not access to get the pictures. But they say that all 10 patients had abnormal function MRI brain scan, and the most common abnormality was hyperconnectivity of the anterior component of some part in the medial orbitofrontal area. This is a study on healthy volunteers that the researchers looked at 60 hertz magnetic field exposures, and they were interested in the power lines, in the high power lines. And they said, okay, let's do functional MRI and see if there is anything happening in these people's brains. So they saw that when there is high exposure from power lines, there is activation of the primary somatosensory cortex, there is activation of the anterior cingulate cortex, and of the cerebellum. This Dever already showed about the glucose in the brain. This is a study. So there is Amir and some people who are very have a problem with the studies that try to say that electrohypersensitivity does not exist because the patients can't cognitively recognize when radiation is on or off. So they always come and tell me, look at these researchers and show me why these studies are wrong. So I personally don't have an interest in these studies because I don't really care if the patient can recognize if the radiation is on or off. What I care about is that whether this patient's body responds to the radiation, even if cognitively he or she doesn't know if it's on or off. So Marino, who is a researcher of sleep, has been studying this problem for many years, and he did the study on a woman, a female physician from England, and they showed that she really could not recognize whether the exposure was on or off, but her body responded, which is actually what really matters. Now I want to make a small halt and discuss something else, because there is my colleague Chuck Greenblatt, and he has become kind of interested in this magnetite thing. And we think this might be some mechanism to describe the problem. Because magnetite can be formed inside the body. It's an iron oxide that can be formed biologically. And it has redox activity, surface charge, and magnetic behavior. And in 2016, this very, very interesting study showed that magnetite was seen inside the brain. Okay, so magnetite might be seen inside the brain, so what's so interesting about that? But it was a very specific type of magnetite which is caused by combustion and not the kind that is created inside the body. So they found, these people have been researching for about 20 years, the air pollution in Mexico City and in Manchester and other places, and they found the same magnetite outside the body from car pollution and inside the body. And the next question was, how did it enter the brain? Because these are really large particles. How do they enter the brain? So what has been suggested is that they enter the brain directly through the olfactory bulb. And to enter the olfactory bulb, they went through the olfactory neurons. And I've presented this in some conferences. What happens is that the nose breathes the air, and then there is some backward transport inside the nerve from the nose to the brain. And then it goes to the olfactory bulb, which is this. And interestingly, where does it go from here? It goes to the limbic system. Now, when the limbic system has a problem, people who have a problem with their limbic system, they behave kind of like crazy people. They have they have differences in behavior, and they behave weirdly. So this is a mechanism that can explain why people who have problems in their limbic system would be considered psychiatric. So if air pollution or iron and air pollution were to come up into the brain through this way, through this pathway, and then they had more iron in the brain, this would respond to the radiation in the environment. So it is actually a mechanism that bypasses the blood-brain barrier, whether you believe that it is open or not. This group of researchers, including Niels Kuster from ITIS, showed that pulse-modulated RF alters brain physiology, and they showed it especially in the 14 hertz, which is why I have a problem with the Wi-Fi in the schools, because the Wi-Fi in the school uses a system that says, okay, it's on all the time, but once it's not used, then it turns itself off, and there's only this beacon frequency saying, I'm available if you need to connect. But then it uses the 10 or 12 or 14 hertz to do this, and this is what affects the brain. Because when people try to concentrate, they use the waves that are around this 12 and 14 hertz, which is why it would be better to put, if you say it is an absolute necessity to use a router in the school, which I do not agree with, it would be better to use a small router and turn it off when you need it and turn it off when you don't need it and not use this big, big system that is around the whole school and turns itself on and off and uses this beacon frequency all the time. Okay. Other things that have been described are the autonomic nervous system, which can describe heart palpitations, pain or pressure in the chest, which I also saw in my patients. Here's a study that showed tinnitus. I won't go into it. And something about fertility. Okay, biomarkers. Some biomarkers were not shown. Haudel and Kalberg could not show any difference in biomarkers, but Belpom did show something that was not specific, but he did show some differences in biomarkers. This was very interesting. Changes in the blood flows in the parietal lobes of people exposed. But the problem was that to show this, he used a really obsolete technology that nobody understands and nobody can really do. So it has to be shown in a different method so that we can really use this as evidence. But it was a very interesting finding. Okay, so if we have the 5G, so we're not going to have less exposure. That is the point that we're not being told. We're going to have more exposure because it's going to be very infrastructure intensive, and we know that while ideally like cell phones should only be able to do this amount of SAR, practically they do double. And as Daniel said, if we really do have all these antennas next to every house, environmentally sensitive people would have to leave their homes and would have to go live in the desert or in the forest because they have masts. And look at this. This, I pass there every day and I say, I should go inside there and talk to somebody. But nobody would listen, really. And they have smart meters outside their house, which is one smart meter can affect an electro-hypersensitive person. Just one. Now, if we have G5 frequencies, they will add an additional exposures to 700 megahertz and 2.5 and the gigahertz. So people who are complaining about 5G, they complain about the high frequencies. I'm not sure the high frequencies are the problem. I think that the additional exposure, it will not lower exposure. I do not believe that. There will be more exposure. And we're told that as the frequencies get faster, the depth of penetration goes down. But Deborah showed this slide that actually the rate of absorption goes up. And Cillian, you showed this line that goes from your cell phone to the antenna. What if a baby is standing here? That is my problem. The person who wants to put this next to their head will have less exposure. But what about the children in the house? That is what I am talking about. Okay, so the babies and the young children, they experience only the disadvantages. They do not use a cell phone. They should not use the cell phones. And as an answer to Daniel, I did not buy my children's cell phones until they were 15. And then when they come to the house, they're not allowed to use them. People are supposed to call them on their wired telephone. There is no reason. This is skewed social norms. The problem is social. Okay, and also this is very important. Yeah, that's why my problem is not you. My problem is the norms of society that people walk into an elevator and download a movie. Why? And now there is a problem that we are not really able to simulate or to measure these 5G emissions outside the lab. So how can we put them everywhere? Where will the people who are hypersensitive, where will they go to hide? It is... And there is no more an unexposed control group. Okay, so what I think is that we have to check how this is impacting our environment, also look at the multiple energy sources for all these antennas, and about the heating of the water in the environment. Are they raising the global warming? And we also have to think about all these people who are electro-hypersensitive. will leave their workplaces, will leave their homes? Will this affect our economy? And if they get cancer, will this affect our economy? I think that mask sharing is good, because if you're exposed to a mask from a different that you're not the user, you just get the exposure and you don't get any benefit from this. And I think thresholds should be much lower. I think that in schools, wired communication should be used. I think there should not be any wireless meters that help only the companies and not the people. And the schools, the measurements in the schools are not done correctly. And I think that my clinic should not be... I am fighting with the Ministry of Health. I am an illegal clinic. That's why I am a research clinic. The head of the Ministry of Health called the director of Hadassah to say, you are not allowed to have this clinic in your hospital because this disease does not exist. I think that is really stupid. The lucky thing was that he answered him that, okay, but we have patients. What do you suggest we do then? And I think that there should not be advertisements for Wi-Fi. I think there should not be advertisements for cell phones. And I thank Deborah Davis, who helped me publish this paper recently. I thank Daphna, who came to my house and forced me to listen to all the studies about electrohypersensitivity when I wasn't interested in this. Amir, who taught me all the rest. And Tzachi, who is a physician, who is the family physician of a 10-year-old boy that I was treating, and now he has become himself someone really knowledgeable about this. That's it.
About cognitive awareness. So it's immaterial for your argument, but I was thinking differently because I became much more sensitive to all kinds of sensations following all kinds of practices. And
but can you say that when you walk into a bus or you walk into a room, you can sense when it's on or off?
No.
I don't care if you can or not. It doesn't mean you're sensitive or not.
The question is different. I first became aware that I could be aware of electromagnetic fields about 2 years ago. And luckily, I don't suffer from these consequences. But once we have the bodily reactions, it means that some people will be more sensitive, some people will be less sensitive. Mm-hmm. To these same bodily reactions.
Yeah.
Now, the cognitive thing is, well, it might be different with, let's say, sensation of heat or cold. Maybe these kind of sensations, you need to get a few minutes to adjust, few minutes to get the overexposure, etc. So, I think... Beyond your argument, for your argument it's enough, but beyond your argument we should be start thinking about reorganizing our cognitive science to include sensitivity to things we were not accustomed to perceive previously.
I think and maybe you will talk about
complaints
this. It's like a sixth sense. It's a different sense, because when I came to study with Yuri, I came to study to learn about physics. You cannot be an expert on radiation without knowing physics. I can't say that I know everything now, but at least I heard the lectures. And what I discovered is that they are actually aware of a new sense that physiologists don't even know. Okay. So maybe I'll give him the stage.
Just one short question. Is it possible to take the people that are mostly hypersensitive and make exon sequencing? To see if they have...
Please, if you have a lab, please. I've been looking for this. And budget. And budget.
Yes. That's something that
yes,
can be done.
Absolutely,
if you take,
10,
12 people.
I don't know
like
what we're looking for exactly.
No,
but we're looking for...
Changes,
yes, absolutely. We would like to do these kind of things, yes.